I needed to not skate by for once in my life, and they didn't let me.
At the end of the day, if you know that you don't feel good about the job, you got to be able to leave that behind.
They just kept asking me to come back, and I truly love Milwaukee and Southeast Wisconsin.
It's always great to be at WTMJ.
This is WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome to WTMJ Conversations. I'm your host, Libby Collins. When a suspect involved in criminal activity is killed by a police officer, media reports often focus on the family's reaction to the loss of their loved one. But what about the officer who was involved in that critical incident? What impact does that have on his or her life? Well, joining us is Hartford Township Police Captain Adam Myers, and his personal experience has led him to establish Stop the Stigma. Were you one of those kids that always wanted to be a police officer?
As far back as I can remember, I wanted to be a police officer. I was born and raised in the city of Racine. We lived on Highway 20, which was one of the main thoroughfares. My parents said every time I heard a siren scream past the house, I raced up to the front window and I looked outside. And every time I saw a police car, I got excited and I looked at my mom and dad and said, an ur car, because of the noise that the siren made. They said the first time I saw a police officer actually get out of a ur car, I looked at them and said, an ur car man. I want to be an ur car man. So all my life, I did what I thought was necessary to become an ur car man or a police officer. You know, I graduated from high school, graduated from college with a criminal justice degree, and then I joined the Army active duty where I was a military police officer for 5 years.
Eventually, you ended up with a police department here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I was lucky enough when I was done with my Army career to move back to Racine, where it all started. I became a Racine police officer for 5-6 years. It was great, and it was kind of surreal because I would drive around the city where I was born, live, worked, and play as a younger man, and I'm like, wow, I'm really doing it. This is where it all started, and I'm a police officer now in my hometown.
How much of your identity was being a police officer?
Almost all of it. I know now that that isn't entirely healthy, but I was a cop, and I was proud of it.
24/7?
24 hours a day, 365, all the time, lived, ate, slept, being a police officer. It was really important to me. I finally reached that goal, that dream job of being an ur car man, a police officer, and I loved it. In 2006, I took another position as a police officer up north in Chippewa County. I was married. I had two daughters. Then, you know, within a year, the marriage fell apart.
So now you're a police officer up north. What happened on April 8th of 2016?
On Friday, April 8th, 2016, I was involved in a critical incident. I used deadly force on someone who had armed themselves with a hatchet inside our Walmart store. Now, my shift was 11 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. It was a normal shift. I went to work, and at the time, I was sitting inside the police department typing up a retail theft report from Shopko. I was dispatched to our local Walmart for somebody who was refusing to leave. Now, it wasn't an emergent call by any means at first. It was just a dispatch call to me saying, please respond to Walmart. There's somebody there refusing to leave. That person is with their chaperones, and they just want some assistance removing them from the store. Now, we do that all the time as police officers. We do it at retail stores, at restaurants, at homes. It wasn't that big of a deal. It surely wasn't emergent at the time. So I grabbed my laptop, walked out the back of the police department, jumped in my squad car, and started driving to Walmart, which was probably less than 2 miles away. Now, initially, the dispatch call came in as a 911 hang-up call. So our dispatch center returned the call and said, hey, you know, it's a 911 hang-up call. If you have an emergency, call us back. And then they eventually did. So dispatch kept them on the line, which was important because they were able to give me continuous update as to what was going on in the store. Now, as I was responding, they advised me that this person was refusing to leave, was walking away from chaperones, and was walking towards the sporting goods section, where she eventually removed a hatchet from the packaging. Initially, it was relayed to me that it was a knife. Not that a knife would have been any less threatening, but they said a knife. So that's when I started stepping it up. I turned on my lights and sirens, and I started traveling at a higher rate of speed towards Walmart. And I remember while I was responding, they said she's in the sporting goods section. So a lot of the Walmarts are set up the same. You can go through the auto center and sporting goods is right there. So my initial idea was I'm going to respond through the auto center, and I even advised the other officers that were on duty that that's what I was going to do, because my intentions were to kind of isolate her back there so she wouldn't walk to the front of the store, keeping everybody else safe. But while I was responding, they said she's threatening customers, she's damaging merchandise, and she's walking towards the front of the store. I had to change everything right there. My idea of responding that way changed. So I entered the parking lot, and it was Friday, 5:15 p.m., very busy, hundreds of people in the store, a lot of people in the parking lot, and nobody would get out of the way. And I'm thinking, will you please move? There's an emergency inside the store. And with my understanding of the layout of the store, I parked at the general merchandise entrance. I turned my siren off and I left my lights going. And I was hoping that if anybody else was coming to the store, they would see my police car parked in front of the door and think, maybe I shouldn't go through that door. So I parked. I exited my vehicle. I drew my weapon right away because I had no idea where she was in the store. I entered the vestibule right away, and I remember seeing a man and a woman standing there. And I looked at them and I asked them, where is she? And they pointed down towards the lawn and garden, towards the health and beauty aisle. I ran down to where they were pointing. And when I first made contact with her, her back was towards me, and it appeared that she was chopping a pallet full of, I think it was weed and feed. I gave her multiple verbal commands, and she turned around and faced me, and that's when I realized she didn't have a knife in her hand. It was a hatchet. Now, I gave her multiple verbal commands to stop, to drop the hatchet. She would not listen to me. She was advancing towards me. There was a lot of customers in that area, and then I made the decision to shoot. I know that when I decided to pull the trigger, not only did I take her life, I changed my life. I changed the lives of everybody in the store, even people who didn't witness it, because there were witnesses that saw the shooting. Even somebody on the opposite side of the store who had maybe been grocery shopping, heard the gunshots, they all have a story to tell now that they were at Walmart and a police officer shot somebody.
How many shots did you fire?
I shot twice. The first round went in and out of one of her legs. And the second round hit her in the upper torso near her sternum, and then she fell to the ground.
How far away from you was she when you shot?
I believe I was about 11 feet.
Did you feel at the time that your life was in danger?
Absolutely, 100%. I remember seeing that hatchet and her walking towards me, and there was probably a million things going through my mind. One of them were, I can't believe she wasn't stopping. I can't believe she wasn't listening to me. And then I remember pulling the trigger, and I remember the shots being so loud, it reminded me of a broken speaker. All my career, I've prided myself in being able to talk people down. Even today, I have never pepper sprayed anybody. I have never used my baton on anybody. I've used my taser a couple times. That situation was completely different. And afterwards, I struggled with shooting her because I was really good at always talking people down and never having to use force. But this time was completely different.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
He told me, well, Adam, I didn't want to tell you this over the telephone, but she died.
Hartford Township Police Captain Adam Myers talks about the call he received revealing the fate of the woman he shot.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
I'm your host, Libby Collins. Let's return to our conversation with Hartford Township Police Captain Adam Myers. What happened after the woman was shot?
My corporal arrived on the scene. He escorted me out of the store. We got into his squad car and we drove back to the police department.
What was your state of mind at that time?
I wanted to tell everybody what happened. I wanted to tell the sheriff's department, there were deputies that were responding. There were police officers from other agencies that were responding. I was in shock. Things really seemed surreal. And I remember after I was cleared to go home from the police department, now I was still in uniform. They had taken my gun, but they said, okay, Adam, you can go home. We're done here. You take the weekend off. And then on Monday, we're going to begin the investigation. And that's normal protocol. But I remember getting in my squad car and reaching up in my visor because that's where my cell phone was. And the first thing I thought of was to call my parents because I wanted them to know what happened without them hearing about it on social media or the news, because it was over the news really quick. The media responded right away. TV stations responded right away. So I wanted to reach out to them right away and let them know what happened. And my mom's baby boy is calling them saying, "Hi, Mom, is Dad there?" And she said, "Yeah, can he get on the phone, please?" And she could tell something was wrong. And then my dad got on the phone, too, to talk to his son. And I said, "I just want to let you know that I shot somebody at work. I'm okay. I want you to know because I didn't want you to find out from somebody else or from the news." And later on, my mom and I talked, and she told me that she could tell that I was in shock. She could tell that my voice was different. The way I was responding to questions were different. And a mom usually knows her son very well. And me saying, "I'm fine, I'm okay," she knew I wasn't.
What was the media coverage like? You said it was all over the news. What was their angle?
I think the media was fair. It was in Minneapolis newspapers, other newspapers in Minnesota and Wisconsin, television news, radio news. Although I was told not to pay attention to that, I still paid attention to it, and I wanted to see what they were saying. And I think they were fair and equal to the person I shot who eventually died, and fair and equal to me. So I don't really have any complaints.
How long after you shot the woman did she pass away?
That night, when I was released from the police department, I went home. And I drove home, and I don't remember the route I took. I do remember pulling my squad car into the driveway and getting out, walking into the front door of my house, and nobody was there. I was divorced. I remember walking in and kneeling down next to my love seat and praying to God that she wouldn't die. I didn't want her to die.
How did you learn the woman you shot had died?
The next morning, Saturday morning, I thought to myself, I want to do something normal. So that's what I was planning on doing. And while I was walking out to my car, the chief called me. And I sat down in my car, answered his phone, and just the typical, "Hey, how you doing? I'm good." And he asked me when I could come see him that day. And I said, "Well, I'm going to go get my haircut, then I'm going to pick up my kids, and I'll come see you." I don't know why I told him that, but that was my plan. And he told me, "Well, Adam, I didn't want to tell you this over the telephone, but she died." And the reason why he did that, and we talked later, the reason why he did that is because he didn't want me to find out through social media or text messaging or the news. And I remember when that conversation ended, I remember sitting there and thinking, this changes everything. I actually killed somebody. And that's a big deal to me. It's not a normal thing to go out there and do that. Now, I had been a police officer for umpteen years, and is it possible that I could shoot and kill somebody? Yes, but the probability, no, it's probably not going to happen. Well, it did happen, and this was my reality now, and it just seemed surreal. Even though I knew I was going through what I was going through, it was just something I began struggling with.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
But I felt like I ran out of excuses of saying, "Hey, you know, I just can't be here. Today's a rough day for me." So I figured I had to come up with excuses.
Hartford Township Police Captain Adam Myers talks about the lengths he went to not show up for work.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
I'm your host, Libby Collins. Let's return to our conversation with Hartford Township Police Captain Adam Myers. So the investigation took place and you were cleared. But there was still a reaction from some members of the community to
Yes.
you about what you did.
Yes, absolutely. I received hate mail at the police department. I have a piece of hate mail right here. And this piece of hate mail was mailed to the police department without a return address, without a signature. And it says, "Hey to the murderer cop. What the hell is your big, strong, armed, trained, macho man bastard serving the community policeman doing shooting and murdering a 25-year-old developmentally disabled young lady in a Walmart store? Throw some socks at her or a chair or a few pillows or a bicycle or some spray or a taser. You SOB murderous cop, I hope a DUI driver shoots you." Now, when that came to the police department, I am an emotional guy. And my chief recognized that, and I didn't get to see this right away, which I'm grateful for. He told me that we were receiving hate mail and that he wasn't going to let me read it. My chief, Cal Smokowitz at the time, he was great. He supported me 100%. He reached out to the media almost immediately and said that he supported me. And when I found that out, I actually saw his comment online and printed it out and put it in a frame and put it on my desk. Because when your chief supports you, when your boss supports you, regardless of what profession, what job you're doing, that means everything.
You continued to do your job after this.
I was suspended with pay, just pending investigation like normal. And after about 30 days, I was cleared and went back to work.
Was it easy to go back to the routine?
Initially, it was. I thought it was. I didn't realize that my critical incident killing somebody in the line of duty was going to affect me the way it did. But I started slipping. The support I got from the community was great. There were many times that people would recognize me as being the officer involved in the shooting, and they would tell me, "Hey, are you Adam Myers? Were you the one in the shooting?" And I would confirm that, and they would say, "We were praying for you. We were praying for you at church. We wanted you to do good. It's good to see you back on the street. Can I give you a hug?" And this is a complete stranger that supports me, and I didn't even know they existed.
Seems like you were okay for a while, but then you didn't want to go to work anymore.
There was one time, self-harm. I used a 12-inch crescent wrench to strike my left knee many times. This was during a busy 4th of July week that I didn't want to work. But I felt like I ran out of excuses of saying, "Hey, you know, I just can't be here. Today's a rough day for me." So I figured I had to come up with excuses. So that was one of them that I did.
And, wait. Yeah. Okay, you took a 12-inch wrench and you struck your knee a number of times. What sort of injury did you cause?
Well, I caused redness, bruising, abrasions, just enough so when I went into the emergency room, the doctor would see that something had happened. They gave me x-rays, they gave me crutches, they gave me pain meds, and I lied to them and I said I tripped and fell out my back door and struck my knee on a manhole cover that was in my backyard.
Did everybody buy that excuse?
They did. That's something that I'm shameful for today, because that was the chief that supported me all the time. And I still remember leaving the emergency room and going to the police department and hobbling in with crutches, knowing darn well that it was a big lie, going in there, giving him my doctor's excuse and saying I can't be at work. And I got off. I got off of work because of my lie.
And then you went back to work.
I did.
Routine started again.
I did.
But you were still looking for excuses not to go to work, and you started to binge and purge.
There was one time that, getting ready for my shift, I was taking a shower. And while I was in the shower, I was kind of constructing a plan as to how to get out of work. And my idea was, well, there's a Burger King and there's a McDonald's restaurant on the way to work. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to, you know, gear up, get ready for work and hop in my car. And I went through the Burger King drive-thru and I got a bunch of breakfast and a couple orange juices and washed them down. And then I did the same thing at McDonald's. And I parked my car behind the police department and walked in and played the sick employee and acted like I was sick. When I walked in, I made myself vomit in the police department's bathroom and made sure the door was open enough that people would hear or see me. I made sure that I missed the toilet so a little of the vomit would get on the floor, and then I was sent home. But the thing is if I would have just said, "I'm struggling, I can't be here today, I need to go home," it would have been okay. But because of that stigma and because I felt like I had no other choice, I started coming up with lies to get out of work.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
Fireball whiskey was my best friend. I used to drink 750 milliliters of vodka in less than 30 minutes and I would sleep the day away.
Hartford Township Police Captain Adam Myers talks about self-medicating to ease the pain of shooting a woman in the line of duty.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
And I'm Libby Collins. Our guest today is Hartford Township Police Captain Adam Myers. You also started drinking.
I did.
How much?
A lot. Fireball cinnamon whiskey was my best friend. I used to drink vodka, 750 milliliters of vodka in less than 30 minutes, and I would sleep the day away. But I would make my own cocktails. Before my shooting, I enjoyed wine, and I had a collection of wine bottles, but I went through that really, really quick. Because I would drink to mask the pain and try to numb what I was feeling. And so what I would do is I would pour a glass of wine and I would make my own cocktails. I would put either sleeping medicine or cold medicine into the wine. There was one time I even reached into the medicine cabinet and took my daughter's cough medicine that had codeine in it. And that makes you all warm and fuzzy and feeling good. But before I would go places, my routine was to stop by a local gas station and buy these little cinnamon whiskey bottles that were either one or two shots of whiskey. And what I would do is I would drink two or three of those right in my car, right in the gas station parking lot, and I would throw them in the back of my SUV or I would throw them out the window while I was driving to where I needed to go. And I would rationalize that it would take about 30 minutes for alcohol to kick in. So it would be okay for me to do that because by the time I got where I was supposed to be, then the alcohol would kick in. I was so lucky that I didn't crash into somebody. I was so lucky that I didn't kill somebody. I was lucky I wasn't arrested, but I just didn't care.
But you engaged in other reckless behavior, too. You even drove with your kids in the car.
I did. There was one time that I was day drinking, and I knew I had to pick my youngest daughter up from her mother's house, which was about, I want to say, 20 miles away from my house, and bring her to gymnastics. So I thought I was okay. Deep down, I knew I wasn't okay. But hey, I had a responsibility, which was being irresponsible. But I had a responsibility to go pick up my daughter. And while I was driving her from her mother's house to gymnastics, instead of taking a right turn, I took a left turn, and I drove an additional 40 miles out of the way. I probably drove a total of 60 miles intoxicated.
Did you drink on the job?
Never.
But you must, if you were drinking that much, there must have been days when you went to work and either you were hungover or it was obvious to anybody who was near you that you had been drinking.
What I would do is we would usually have 3 days off in a row. So on my Friday, when I would go home, I would start drinking. And my first 2 days off, I would drink. I would drink like a fish. I was a drunk. And then that third day was a day to recover, which really wasn't recovering. I mean, I just bummed around the house and was depressed. But I knew that that was not the answer. If I would show up to work even a little bit hungover or anybody suspected that I was drinking, that would be the end of my career. So that was kind of the game I played. And I did that for years and years and years.
When you say years and years, how long?
Well, my shooting happened in 2016, and I finally decided to get help in December 2021.
Through these 6 years.
Yes.
You're drinking. You're hurting yourself.
I am.
So you don't have to go to work.
And I even tried marijuana for the first time in my life.
Didn't help.
No, absolutely not.
So eventually, they must have started to notice at work. You weren't the same guy.
Right. My chief at the time was supportive. I think a lot of people knew I was struggling. I just think that maybe they didn't know what to say or do, so they chose not to get involved. And I understand that. Throughout the years of being a police officer, there were some times that I probably should have reached out to other officers, and I didn't because I was more worried about how it would look upon me, so I didn't do that.
You mentioned the other officers.
Yeah.
You were involved in a training exercise.
I was.
When you had a panic attack.
Absolutely. That happened on December 28th, 2021. I was attending a active shooter training at a elementary school, and I was seated comfortably like I am now. And we were watching a PowerPoint presentation about different active shooters. I started getting really, really hot, getting a knot in my stomach, and about a minute passed, and I reached up to my forehead, and it was drenched in sweat. I was having a panic attack. But the first thing I could think about was, I have to fight this. I have to hide it. I can't let anybody know that I'm struggling right now. But it would have been okay. There was probably about 20 or 30 other police officers there. They all knew I was involved in the shooting. If I would have just raised my hand and said, I'm sorry, I can't do this, I have to go home, it would have been okay. But I think because of the stigma, I truly believe that, and because of the ego of being a cop and the stigma associated with mental health, my first reaction was to fight through it and to hide it and not tell people what I was going through.
But the guys sitting around you must have noticed something was wrong.
I would think so, but nobody said anything to me.
But finally, your chief had enough.
Well, this was a different chief. The chief that was with me, he had retired in late 2021.
This is the one who had supported you through all this.
Yes.
And a new chief came in.
And I liked him. I admired him. I respected him. I didn't have any problems with him. But when the chief that supported me retired, I felt lost. I felt alone. I was worried. Now, I know this chief supported me. How is it going to be from this point on? Because we had worked together from, I think it was like 2009 until 2021. And then he retired. And now I have a new chief. And this new chief supported me. He knew that I was publicly speaking about my mental health. And he supported me in doing that.
Wait, but you were publicly speaking about your mental health, but you were still engaging in these dangerous activities.
I was. I began speaking about my critical incident, the shooting, and the aftermath involving my mental health in 2019 right here in Wisconsin at a college.
But you knew you were still engaging in things that were harmful.
I was. Yep, absolutely.
Did you feel hypocritical?
I did.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
I feel like I was just abandoned, like they washed their hands of me. And I remember being walked out of the police department, and I'm thinking, what now?
Hartford Township Police Captain Adam Myers talks about the day he was fired from his dream job.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back to our conversation with Hartford Township Police Captain Adam Myers. I'm your host, Libby Collins. I want to go back to this new chief, because you were given an ultimatum.
I was. What had happened was December 31st, it was New Year's Eve. I was working a patrol shift for somebody. I was a detective at the time, but I was working patrol for somebody. And I started my shift at 11 a.m. And I remember sitting down in the squad car and I said to myself, you know what? I'm done. I ain't doing this no more. I quit. And I don't think I wanted to quit being a police officer. I think I wanted to quit coping the way I was for years. It wasn't working for me anymore. So I reached out to one of the sergeants and I told him, can you please come over? I need you to come with me to speak with the chief. I'm going to quit. So he met with me and he's like, hold up a second. You're not quitting. We'll go to the chief. I said, yeah, I'm done. I'm not doing this no more. So we went into the chief and they were both very supportive. They told me, take some time off, and when you're ready to come back, reach out and let us know. And I did that. I think about 2 weeks had passed, and I reached out to the chief, and I said, yeah, I'm ready to come back. And he explained to me, in order for you to come back, you have to get a psychological evaluation, a fitness for duty test. Now I was all for it. I was like, all right, let's go, because I had been speaking about my mental health. I know it's important. And in my head, I'm like, I can come back to work. I'm fine. So I scheduled this appointment. And it was from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And I remember driving to the office and I was thinking, I'm going to lie. I'm going to lie. I'm going to try to beat this test. And then when I got there, I was sitting in the waiting room and I thought to myself, you know what, Adam, the only way that you're going to get better is if you're honest. You have to be honest. And I chose to be honest. After the examination, I was diagnosed with major depressive disorder, PTSD with acute stress, with dissociative features, and I was unfit for duty. The police department psychologist told me that he recommends 6 months short-term disability. I requested a 90-day leave of absence from the police department, which was approved, and I started therapy. I was going to therapy 2-3 times a week. It was helpful. I was feeling better. Even the department psychologist told me, if you keep going the way you are, I don't see why you couldn't go back to work in August. I was also put on a safety plan. In April, a couple months after being unfit for duty, I was put on a safety plan because during my evaluation, there were some suicidal ideations.
Did you ever try to kill yourself?
I didn't try to kill myself. However, I did put my duty weapon to my head about a dozen times. My duty weapon is a Glock 40 caliber Model 22. You remove the magazine, you clear the chamber, and then I would put it to my temple and I would pull the trigger and I wanted to hear that metallic click. Now, I never thought about dying by suicide. I never said, you know what, I'm done, I want to kill myself. I never thought that, but I still have no idea why. Why did I do that? And some people said, maybe you were planning to do it. And I don't think so. But I did easily about a dozen times. And I did that when I was so intoxicated. That also scares me because how many times did I do it when I was blackout drunk and did that? And what if I would have forgotten to remove the bullet from the chamber? Then somebody would have found me dead because I would have killed myself. And they probably would have thought, you know what? Adam was depressed. It's sad. He killed somebody in the line of duty. We understand. But I never truly wanted to die. I am religious. I'm Lutheran. I remember many nights I went to bed praying to God, asking God, please don't let me wake up. Or can you fast forward me through all this garbage? I don't want to deal with this anymore. But I never had a plan and never said, you know what, today's the day I want to die. I'm done with everything.
The psychological evaluation.
Yeah.
Came to your chief.
It did. And
he couldn't put you back out on the street.
Right. And I understand that. I supported 100%. And when I received that evaluation, I started reading through it and I started crying because the pages were full of answers to all the questions I've had over the years. It's like, that's me. Now, what do I have to do to get better? What do I have to do to get better? I was all for it. I was motivated. I never missed therapy. I was ready and I wanted to go back to work.
But didn't the chief tell you you either had to resign or he was going to fire you?
He did.
Was that based on that evaluation?
I had met with the chief and he told me that they were not going to extend my leave of absence and that I could either resign or I would be terminated. And I thought about it and I said, I'm not quitting. This is work related. I'm not quitting. So I was terminated. And it even hurts now to talk about it because I had been there for 14 years. I had never been suspended. I had never been disciplined. I received awards. I received medals. I received awards from state legislators, senators, the police association. But yet now I really, really needed help. And I feel like I was just abandoned, like they washed their hands of me. And I remember being walked out of the police department and I got in my Jeep. And I'm thinking, what now? I'm not a cop anymore. What if I would have went home and killed myself? Now, I don't know what the answer is to following up with previous employees, but everybody knew I loved being a police officer. But now all that was done. I just completely felt abandoned. I felt like they just washed their hands of me and said, like, Adam's not our problem anymore.
After that dream job went away,
Yeah. You
now have a psychological evaluation that goes really deep.
It does.
And says, this is what is wrong with you.
Right, right.
What did you do?
I went home and, You know, unfortunately, when I was on leave of absence, I didn't receive any short-term disability pay, any workers' compensation pay. I had to apply for unemployment. And I truly believe the reason why I didn't receive that pay is because it was a mental health issue. If I would have broke my arm or leg, I have no doubt in my mind that I would have received some kind of pay. That day, I went home and I just tried to figure out what I was going to do. And I had to continue to look for jobs. But then shortly after I was terminated, unemployment was suspended because they had to make sure that I wasn't suspended for any wrongdoing or any disciplinary actions. And they did an investigation and they said, yeah, there is no wrongdoing. So then I got all the back pay. But I reached out to my sister and she said, why don't you just move down here? And I said, you know what, Amy, I hardly have any money, maybe some money to fill the tank. And she said, all you have to do is get down here, Adam, and we'll take care of the rest. I packed my stuff up, moved in with my sister in her basement, and her and I always joked that, hey, at least you didn't move into mom and dad's basement. But at the time, I had stopped taking medicine, and I had stopped seeing a therapist, and I thought I was doing okay. I thought I was fine. My sister, secretively, behind my back, was looking for a therapist for me, and I am forever grateful for her doing that. So I got back into therapy. I got back on medication because of my sister. And then once I started getting healthier, you know, I finally put myself first and started taking care of myself, which is difficult to do, especially when you're a police officer, especially when you're a first responder, because your job is to take care of other people. And we usually put ourselves last. But I finally did this. And initially, I never thought I'd want to be a cop again. But then after I started getting healthier, I thought, you know what? I do. I want to be a police officer again. I have some left in the tank. I have a lot of training, a lot of experience that other police officers don't have, especially my shooting. And I want to help. I want to be a police officer again and be there for other people again. I love being a cop. I applied for 50 police departments within 30 minutes of where I was living. And the next day, the day after I mailed these applications, cover letters, and resumes, police departments started calling. And I was like, wow, people want me. And you know, when I was terminated, my first thought was, I'm done being a cop. Nobody's going to want me. They're going to hear about this mental health stuff and they're going to be like, this guy's a nut. He has too much baggage. But people wanted me. They scheduled virtual interviews, telephone interviews, in-person interviews, and it was great. And in a two-week period, three police departments from three separate counties in Wisconsin offered me conditional offers of employment. And I picked where I work now, and I currently am working with the Hartford Township Police Department in Washington County.
And you got a supportive chief.
Absolutely. Chief Sean McGee is great. Within a year of being hired by the Hartford Township Police Department, I was promoted to captain. We have a lake patrol at the police department. We also have a therapy dog named Howie. And we were out on the lake, and he said, I support you 100%. I know you speak publicly about your mental health. I support you. If you want to continue to do that, go right ahead. You can wear your police uniform if you want. I know he supports me. And Libby, that's really the only way that I'm here sitting and speaking with you today, because my chief supports me.
Still ahead on WTMJ Conversations.
I could have been suspended, lost my job. I wouldn't be able to pay my mortgage and had two daughters. How can I support them if I'm not a cop anymore?
Hartford Township Police Captain Adam Myers answers the question, if he knew then what he knows now, would he have pulled the trigger?
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
I'm Libby Collins. Today's conversation is with Hartford Township Police Captain Adam Myers. And you started an organization, Stop the Stigma.
I started Stop the Threat, Stop the Stigma in 2021 in hopes that it will inspire other police officers and first responders to speak about their mental health. Please don't suffer in silence. There's so many people out there that are going through what you went through, or that will go through what you went through, or want to help you.
How many other officers are in the same state of mind as you are?
The law enforcement profession, the first responder profession, is a stressful profession. Now, if you become involved in a critical incident, that adds more stress. In college, in the police academy, and even during field training, they teach you how to be a police officer. They train you very well to be a police officer. Wisconsin's the best. But it's difficult to train police officers how to take care of themselves or respond after a critical incident, because everybody's different. Some people won't be affected the way I was. When I started my career, I worked for the City of Racine Police Department, and I was an evidence technician on third shift, and there was a shooting that occurred. Three people died and seven people were shot. It was a gang shooting. They shot each other over money owed in a dice game. Now, I helped process that crime scene, and later an officer with the police officer support team came around, asked everybody if they were okay. And I was okay. I wasn't having flashbacks, bad dreams. I wasn't poorly coping. I was married at the time. But after I've gone through what I'm going through now, I look back and I thought, you know what? There is no way I would have told that officer that I was struggling if I was. I was born and raised in Racine. This was my dream job. I'm doing what I love doing. Are you okay, Adam? I'm good. I'm okay. I'm fine. There's no way I would have told him, because there would have been a chance that I could have been suspended. There could have been a chance I lost my job. That's my livelihood. I wouldn't be able to pay my mortgage. I was married and had two daughters at the time. How can I support them if I'm not a cop anymore?
Adam, if you knew in April of 2016 what you know now about the impact a critical incident would have on your life, would you have pulled that trigger?
Yes.
We've been talking with Hartford Township Police Captain Adam Myers. He opened up about the day he killed a woman in the line of duty and the mental health struggles he experienced afterwards. He was very open in what he had to talk about, and also the fact that there are a lot of other first responders out there who are dealing with similar issues. Now, if you joined us late and you want to hear our entire conversation with Captain Myers, go to WTMJ.com and share today's show with your friends and family. You'll also find a partial transcript courtesy of eCourt Reporters. For WTMJ Conversations, I'm Libby Collins.